This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey friends, today's guest is Matt Thiessen, lead vocalist and pianist for the Canton, Ohio rock band, Reliant K. Matt and I take the plunge and break down their breakout single, Be My Escape, taken from their 2004 and first major label album, I mentioned to Matt that this is one of the more interesting songs I've broken down on this show. The arrangement is grandiose, unorthodox, and has more twists and turns than you can count. He explained that was the idea going in, to not write predictable songs with formulaic arrangements. And man, did they succeed in not doing so. The track sits at 4 minutes but feels half as long, something I chalk up to innovative and great songwriting. I mentioned to Matt that drummer Dave Douglas shines on this track. His placement and feel within the song makes it completely stand out among the majority of other pop and punk bands of that era. Matt refers to co-producer Mark Lee Townsend as another member of Reliant K, a trust and a bond that has been nurtured for going on 3 decades. And I said it during the episode, and I'll say it again. I love this podcast. Yeah, I remember hearing Be My Escape back in the day, but going in deep and breaking it down as we do here allows me to hear the song again for the very first time. Super awesome. For all this and a whole lot more, stick around.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Matt, what's up?
Nothing. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I want to thank you for sitting in today with me. I've known about you and your band for a long time, but I don't recall ever meeting.
Yeah, I don't think we have. I was really excited to be a part of this, mostly actually just because I wanted to meet you.
Well, that is really nice to say. And I got to tell you something. While researching for this episode, okay, and this has never happened before, so I kind of got a little giddy, but I don't want to get too excited because this was on the internet, okay? It was on, I believe, your Wikipedia page. It said, since Reliant K's early days, Thiessen's main influences have been in the pop-punk genre, specifically NoFX, Less Than Jake, Gotti Hook, MXPX, and Goldfinger. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Very true. Very true.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for the mention.
Well, of course,
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for the music. Honestly, yeah, a lot of what we're going to be talking about has to do with you, and especially the Hello Rock You album and all that. So
that means a lot. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I'll tell you, I'm impressed. I've researched a lot about you, and I just didn't know how much production credit and writing and stuff that you have done with everyone from Katy Perry. You collaborated with John Foreman from Switchfoot, who we had on the show. John is awesome.
He is so awesome.
You've wrote songs with Glenn Ballard. You produced the Owl City record. That record sounds awesome.
Cool. Thank you. A lot of the cool extra stuff outside of the band that I got to do came from actually meeting Adam from Owl City. And he was kind of the first artist I ever really worked with that wasn't, you know, Reliant K. And that set me in a direction that, you know, a lot of cool things happened.
Well, that is really cool. Well, the song that we're going to be talking about today, Be My Escape, and I heard this back in the day when it was released. It's from the record I guess I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
Which was released on November 2nd, 2004. It was your first for Capitol Records. That was our label, Less Than Jake's label in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Was Louis your A&R guy by any chance?
No.
He wasn't.
It was after that. Okay. He may have still been there, but we had a couple different guys. But actually, Andy Slater was the one who kind of brought us in. It was cool. With this album, we released it on Goatee Records, which was the label that we'd always put our albums out on. And Capitol just kind of came along and said, hey, you know what? I think we can do something with you guys outside of just the Christian music. So they kind of, we had two labels for that release. It was kind of cool like that.
Right. I've had a couple of Christian artists on here. You know, I've had Reese Roper from Five Iron Frenzy.
Cool.
And we had, you know, John Foreman again from Switchfoot. And, you know, I talked to these guys about it a little bit. Did you ever feel coming up in that scene that it was a little bit limiting to you from some of the Christian fans, or vice versa, some of the secular fans that maybe weren't as accepting when they heard the word Christian?
You know, I always embraced every element of that. I really enjoyed, I don't know, some of the hoops you had to go through, some of the things you had to do, because it was a special, I don't know, it was a special time. Christian music was in a unique place back then. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it. You know, kind of like embracing the tough stuff that the world could throw at you. Like, we didn't get to do everything we wanted all the time. And you kind of just had to like mind your P's and Q's and stuff like that. And I liked it. I liked it.
Yeah, I've always said that controversy breeds conversation. But this song, as I was saying, you know, it's about 18 years old now. I definitely heard it back in the day, but that's what I love about doing this podcast, because I'm now able to discover songs again for the very first time. And this song is a monster. This song is... It's so all over the place. The only congruent parts of this really are the pre-chorus and the chorus. Mm-hmm. The rest of this thing, I don't understand how this could be on paper your biggest song, because it's just so unorthodox.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we started writing songs. Nobody told us how to do it. I wasn't great at it. And, you know, so arrangements, I didn't know how to do that. You know, the normal, I would just like, let's just throw weird stuff in all the time. And I don't know, make songs into a bit of an adventure. But yeah, I don't know how on paper this song worked either, to be honest.
I call this the 4 a.m. song. For the past 2 days, whenever I have to get up and, you know, use the bathroom in the middle of the night because I'm middle-aged, I'm humming this song as I'm standing there, you know, going. So it's been in my head for a couple days. For maybe a little too much information there for the listeners.
No, I love it.
But, you know, Matt, you're obviously the lead vocalist. You play piano, rhythm guitar. Matt Hoops... plays lead guitar in the band, been there since the beginning. And Dave Douglas, the drummer who played in this track, Dave was with you for the first number of years, took a break there, but now he's back with the band. And what a monster these two guys are.
Yeah.
I mean, the bass playing and the drumming on this song is over the top.
That's cool. Yeah. The bass player was actually our original bass player. His name is Brian Pittman. And he actually left the band in the middle of making this album. So he played on most of the tracks, but...
He did play on it. Okay, I had read he left. I thought Matt had come in. So my bad on that.
No, all good.
Well, you guys have released 9 studio albums, 7 EPs, which, by the way, the vinyl countdown, this might be the greatest title for a record ever. I wish you didn't do that. I wish I would have thought of it. It's awesome. 2 Christmas albums and 1 collection of rarities. And... 2003, the album you put out before was 2 Lefts Don't Make a Right, But 3 Do. And was Be My Escape a holdout from that album, or did you write Be My Escape specifically for mm-hmm?
It was probably the first song that I wrote after we were done with the 2 Lefts album. So I had the piano riff, but I don't think I had it at the time of making 2 Lefts.
And I know the album was credited to Tom Lord Alge and J.R. McNeely for mixing. Do you recall who mixed this track, Be My Escape?
It's funny. So we had enough money in the budget to get Tom Lord Alge, you know, to mix 3 songs. So we had to pick which 3 songs we thought would be maybe singles. And we picked 3 songs that were not this song. And so we actually ended up having, I think, Tom Lord Alge mix it again. So we got like a 4th one, but that's not the version that's on the album, which is kind of cool.
Really? So yeah. did JR mix that one?
Yeah, JR mixed the whole album except for, I want to say, The One I'm Waiting For, My Girl's Ex-Boyfriend, and High as 75. Those are the 3 that Tom mixed.
Well, it's a trip, and I've talked about this on this show before. You know, if you look at when this record was released, 2004, and you go back 18 years from that, that's 1986. Nothing in 1986 sounded sonically like something from 2004. But this song...
Right.
Still holds up in 2022 to me. It still sounds like a great production. It doesn't sound dated to me.
Well, that's awesome. I would say, you know, a lot of that also applies to your band too, right? Like, you made these albums that just, they sounded really good. The guitars, the drums, the bass, the vocals, everything were great. And that's going to hold up. And fortunately, I think this, the genre of music, the ska and the pop punk, or, you know, whatever it is, it's going to be around forever. You know, it's really cool that I don't know. It's reached that.
That's awesome. And you produced this record along with Mark Lee Townsend. And Mark Lee Townsend's been like the unofficial other member of your band.
Oh, yeah.
He's done some touring with you guys and produced every record except 2013's Collapsible Lung. You didn't work with him on that. He's also done The Wedding, the OC Supertones. He played guitar for the band DC Talk.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. What a cool band that was.
Amen. That's actually how the whole thing came together with our band getting signed, was that Mark Townsend lived in Canton, Ohio, which is a small town. It's a small city. And his stepdaughter knew Matt Hoops, our guitar player. And they went to school together. And we ended up convincing Mark to do our demo for $200. He did 11 songs for $200 in 2 days. And we had this demo produced by the guitar player from DC Talk. And then he goes out on the road with DC Talk and showed Toby McKeon, the singer writer for that band. He heard our demo and ended up signing us to a developmental deal at the time. But it was crazy how that all happened. And coming from Canton, Ohio, it was a bit of a unique story.
It's you used to see it a lot more in the 60s and 70s where bands would run with the same producer. You don't see that a lot anymore. And when I noticed that, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there's this sense of family with him. He's very much like a father figure in my life. And this comfortability, just I'm not afraid to put out a bad idea, right? I'm not afraid to like go for it or scream or sound stupid in front of him. And he'll, you know, find a way to manipulate it and make it not sound so stupid.
Well, it sounds like there's some trust there too, which,
amen,
you know, that is so important with a producer. There has to be a mutual trust going on. When that fails, then you have real problems.
Amen, for sure.
Right on. Well, we're going to jump into the track right now. This song's 4 minutes long. Doesn't feel like it's 4 minutes. Goes by a lot quicker than that. And actually, before we jump in, you said you didn't have this as a holdover from the previous record in 2003, but do you recall actually writing it?
I remember how it started. I was still living with my parents and we were touring at the time, but I remember I had the piano riff, the doodle, 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 that thing. And I would just play it over and over and over again. And my parents were so sick of it, like so sick of hearing that. And it was funny, this last Easter, we're all at my sister's house and she's got this baby grand and I'm playing. And my stepdad's like, I wish I could just sit around and listen to Matt play the piano all day. And my mom's like, let me remind you that when he was writing and he lived at the house, you were so sick of it. So it's pretty funny.
I think you just answered my question when you said that doo-doo-doo or whatever, how you phrased it.
Yeah.
Is that a triplet, that piano part in the chorus?
Gotta get out of here. Stuck inside this rut that I fell into by mistake.
I don't know.
Or is it single notes?
Ding, I just think ding, it's quarter ding. Notes. Yeah, but it's just fast. Just trying to do it as fast as I can.
Okay. And maybe there's a delay or something on there that I'm hearing. Okay. Because I had that written down here. I was wondering if that was just single notes or if that was some delay I'm here. It's such a hook.
Oh.
Something so simple could just define a song. You know, when that part comes on, if that wasn't there, it wouldn't be the same.
Cool.
Yeah. So getting into the song, the intro, it's guitar right off the top for 4 bars. Then the stereo guitars, bass and drums for 12 bars. Then the whole groove changes. Drums go to a 4-on-the-floor beat, bass is laying down an awesome vibe, and the guitar, stereo guitars left and right are playing this counter rhythm pattern that is so cool. And it's almost like you get two intros here at the top.
Yeah.
Which is kind of strange in and of itself, but it works great. Those guitars, I feel like I'm playing ping pong with my ears. They're just going back and forth, and it's so electric, that part. It's great.
Cool. Yeah, there's definitely an energy to that live when we were cooking it up. And big influence was No Knife. Do you remember No Knife?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This distance will change.
So such a cool band. We saw them open for Jimmy Eat World back in 97 and like loved them ever since. So that was a little No Knife kind of nod there. But yeah, I guess we had two intros, right? And we liked them both. So we're just like, let's just do it all at the beginning of the song, you know?
Yeah, no, like I said, I think it works perfectly in this instance. And do you recall doing a demo for this song?
Ooh, there has to be one. That is a great question, though. Yeah, there's probably a group of demos that are out there somewhere, but I wouldn't know what they sounded like.
I didn't look on YouTube. I'm going to look because we always try to play a demo, but I can't imagine, and I mean this with sincerity, I can't imagine the demo would be, I mean, the production right? on this song. I imagine the demo would be like a skeleton because there's so much going on.
There's not enough hands and fingers and drumsticks to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, but... yeah, if you could dig up a demo, I'd love to hear it. And like I said, we'll take a look online and see if we can find one.
Yeah, I think we probably protected those pretty well. Like, don't let anybody hear this.
Well, after this, what I'm calling a double intro, we get into verse one.
I've given up, I'm giving up slowly. I'm blending in so you won't even know me. Apart from this whole world that shares my fate. This one last bullet you mentioned. It's my one last shot of redemption. I know to live, you must give your life away.
I've given up on giving up slowly. I'm blending in so you won't even know me. Apart from this whole world that shares my fate. This one last bullet you mention is my one last shot at redemption. Because I know to live, you must give your life away. What are you saying there?
Well, it's a Christian lyric. When we were writing this album, we were very much, you know, just a part of that scene. And I loved writing songs that were about just my spiritual journey. And honestly, in this instance, I wasn't too happy with myself. And so this song is talking about me kind of being in a bad place, wanting to get out of it. I liked the last shot at redemption. I guess I was thinking about that in my mind. And I'm like, oh, you know, there's got to be a bullet, right? So you make a little cute little pun out of that. And but yeah, I enjoyed writing that.
How do you usually work? Does the lyric come first, or does the music and the melody come first, or sometimes it did all come together?
In this particular instance, I remember singing, I'm giving up slowly, and I didn't know what it meant, you know, but that was just like the first thing that kind of naturally came out while I'm playing this piano riff. And then the rest became, yeah, lyrical, like poetic craft, like sitting there with a piece of paper and a pencil and trying to write a rap. You know, I always just looked at it like, how can I write a rap, get these words to flow and rhyme and like impact on the right beats and the right, you know, sort of thing. So
isn't that great when you sit down and that stream of consciousness happens where, like, amen, you know, those what you call them, those placeholder lyrics end up becoming the lyric in the song because you can't best it later.
Amen. Yeah. And it does mean something, you know. I guess it came from, you know, but it's like I wasn't really thinking about what it meant when I sang it.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times, and this was kind of a point of contention years ago, you know, Less Than Jake's first drummer, Vinny, he wrote all the lyrics back in the day. So there'd be times when, like, we'd be doing demos, we didn't have a second verse, and I would just make up something. And then we'd get in the studio, and the producer's like, you know, we'd have a second verse by then. He'd be like, well, wait a second, you're not singing the same thing. I'm like, I know, that was a nonsense thing. He's like, yeah, but it's better than the lyrics that's there, you know? Not so much it's a better lyric, but you know, a lot of times you sell it with conviction.
Right. There's like an authenticity with that, initial.
Yeah, that you can't replicate with other words. They could be the same amount of syllables, the same amount of words, and it just doesn't connect the way that the placeholder lyric connects.
Yeah, that's the thing about music, especially songwriting, that I haven't quite wrapped my head around yet, is why that initial thing that you come up with is always the best. And it's how it's hard to beat things, you know, when you're trying to beat your demos or whatever.
It really is. Well, this first verse, after the first two, what I'm calling the two intros here, the song just keeps getting, what I'm going to use the word, strange. Not in a bad way, just in a great way. Off the top, it's just vocals in an insanely fast piano part. The bass notes of the piano are playing the root notes there. That's for the first three lines. On the last two lines, guitars, bass, and drums are in there with the piano, but yet it's another groove here.
Uh-huh.
You're getting another feel in the song. So we're already at like five, we're already in five feels, and we're not even to the first pre-chorus.
That's funny.
Was there any talk or any thought at this point from yourself or from Mark Lee Townsend, the other producer, of there's too many parts here. There's too many grooves. This is shifting around. Or was this just another song and you weren't thinking of it as being your signature song or a hit?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We didn't ever try to write a song that fit the radio mold. That wasn't us, you know? So crafting this song, I imagine like we just had all these pieces and just we couldn't let go of some of them, you know? They had to be in the song. So you squeeze it in and then find a way to make it flow in the end. And I think, I mean, as you said, it doesn't sound like it's 4 minutes, so that's good.
Well, and speaking of the end, we'll get there later, but just, you want to talk about tripping me out with a song. And again, I heard this song back in the day, but you know, 2004, I was on the road 9 months out of the year. I was, There was all kinds of stuff and I never analyzed it like I did now. And there's just so much here. After verse one, we go into pre-chorus one. This is where the first harmonies in the song start to happen. And I've been housing all this doubt and insecurity, and I've been locked inside that house. All the while you hold the key, and I've been dying to get out. And that might be the death of me. And even though there's no way of knowing where to go, I promise I'm going because. And I've been housing all this doubt and insecurity, and I've been locked inside that house. All the while you hold the key. I've been dying to get out, and that might be the death of me. And even though there's no way in knowing where to go, promise I'm going because. What are you saying there?
I think I got lucky with some of that stuff because it, you know, it's like it kind of works too well almost. Like I think I probably started with the house. You know, I've been like housing doubt. And then I'm like, all right, so that's a house. Like, how can you make the pun there? And then, you know, then you go with the key. I'm locked in there. So you've got the key. And then, I like the death of me too. Like I've been dying to do this and that might be the death of me. But yeah, I think I just kind of lucked out with that flow, that stream of consciousness. And it turned out to be almost funny, but yet serious, you know?
Do you remember the other guys or Mark? Were they critical of the lyrics or did they say, hey, maybe this line could be better? Or was this what you wrote? You're laughing.
I didn't probably get a lot of criticism about the lyrics because I think nobody else really, you know, did it. So I was like, well, if you don't like it, then, but I would definitely always listen if Matt and the other guys would always pipe up about a lyric they didn't like here or there. But for the most part, they trusted me and I don't know. It was cool that, I don't know. I never felt critiqued by the guys.
Okay. And that's good. Good and bad. Sometimes it's bad when you got guys in the band that are afraid because they can't say something. These are my lyrics. People freak out.
Right.
But, you know, it sounds like you'd be receptive if someone was that forthright and saying, hey, this could be a little bit better here. There's harmonies on the first two lines and there's harmonies on the last two. On the third line, there's harmonies on the words I've been at the very end, be the death of me. In the middle there is no harmonies. And I always ask, how did that happen?
That's a great question.
Were there harmonies there? And in the mixing stage, you said, wait, maybe we don't need those. Let's mute them.
Yeah, probably. And then I guess there was this element. I love just putting a third, you know, that third note harmony on basically everything ever, you know? So I probably harmonized the entire song. And then we went through and said, where can we take these out? You know, sort of thing. I think we often would do that with Reliant K songs. It's like, all right, let's make the harmonies at least a treat, you know, somewhere. Let's not have them through the whole thing.
That's cool. That's one thing I've really gotten out of breaking songs down on this is every song I'm amazed at where the placement, when I look at it, of the backing vocals. Because a lot of times, you know, you'll get into a formula. I've done it where it's like, okay, here's the pre-chorus. There's going to be on the first and third line a harmony. And that's like how many other songs we got. And now when I'm doing harmonies, I'm really thinking like, let's not have it on the first pre-chorus and only the second, you know? And that's why I always ask about those placements. It's very interesting to me.
That's cool.
Yeah, well, here, pre-chorus one, I wrote, there's yet another groove. It changes again. It's a whole other feel here. The guitar, bass, and drums, and the piano here, but it's really cool where the snare and the hi-hat lock, that dunt, dunt. Locked inside that house, all the while you
hold the key, and I've been dying to get. Yeah.
It's great. And it doesn't feel like it should work. It's kind of jarring almost, but what a cool groove.
Yeah. Dave, such a treat to have in the studio, especially pre-production. He just would make songs special with his drum parts. And, you know, there'd probably be a communal sort of, let's agree to the drums should do this or that, but we would try a bunch of different stuff. And I'm sure, you know, that's how we landed on that. And I like that you like it.
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Matt Thiessen after a few words from our sponsors.
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities, from easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock. DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
Just in time for your summer playlist. Punchline's new single, Find Yourself, is out now.
Everybody got so good at everything. I'm just over here trying to keep my house clean. I have an eye flow, man. It's up and it's down. I'm wondering if this is why I'm doing in town. This is a joke, man. This is a fight. Trying to find yourself in the right place, the right time.
Listen to Punchlines Find Yourself on Apple Music, Spotify, and everywhere else you can stream music. Duh.
Now, back to the show.
If this was a straight pop punk song with a straight beat for the whole thing, it just wouldn't be anywhere near what it is. It's unorthodox because of all the different drum patterns and the way it flows. Do you recall coaching Dave at all, or Mark Lee Townsend coaching him at all? Like, hey, maybe try this or that, or does he pretty much come in?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that was the thing. It was pre-production. We would play these songs and then it's like, all the time. It's like, hey, why don't we drop it to a half beat here? Or why doesn't the bass do this and the drums do that with it? And that was one of my favorite parts about, because you can write a song without the band, but if you don't have that drummer there to like change things and I don't know, it's just not the same. And so I actually really miss that right now, trying to write new stuff for the band. I wish Dave and I lived in the same city so we could do that. But
yeah, you just can't get a drum program or a drum machine or you know,
nope.
that can get anywhere close to something like this song, especially. On the last two lines here, the drums go double time on the snare, and then we arrive in chorus one.
Gotta get out of here. I'm stuck inside this rut that I fell into by mistake.
I gotta get out of here. I'm stuck inside this rut that I fell into by mistake. I gotta get out of here. And I'm begging you, I'm begging you, I'm begging you to be my escape. Again, harmonies on all four of those lines. But the falsetto thing, I can't do falsetto. It's just, it's not believable when I do it. It's actually kind of hilarious. I love that guys can do it and do it well. Have you ever lost your voice live where you could hit the mid-range register, but you couldn't do the falsetto part?
The opposite.
The opposite.
If I lose my voice, yeah, falsetto stays. So that happened recently on this last tour. There's days where I felt like I couldn't hit some of the old top notes there, and I just would switch to falsetto instead and hope that nobody mind.
You know, when falsetto is placed correctly and done right, as it is in this chorus, it's brilliant. I've never found it in any of my music or tried to do it. Maybe someday, but it's just like I said, when I do falsetto, it's just not that believable. But this chorus is great. Stereo guitars, bass and drums, and the piano that we talked about earlier is on every beat. It's awesome. It's kind of sounds like it's more over into the right, panned off right, that piano hammering on that A note. It's great. I had written here triplet, but you're saying no, it's probably just a
you're right. You know, it's like I think it's like an eighth note thing, but it was fast. It's hard to play and sing at the same time, which is cool.
Yeah, and there might be some effects on there. The last line, and I'm begging you to be my escape. The drums go double time there. And it picks up before we immediately launch into verse number 2.
Be my escape, giving up on doing this alone now. Cause I failed and I'm ready to be shown out. Told me the way and now I'm trying to get there. And this life sentence that I'm serving, I admit that I'm every bit deserving. But the beauty of grace is that it makes life not fair.
And here's again where it gets interesting, yet a new feel here. The first two lines are stereo guitars, and they're doing this syncopated pattern. It's the pop punk thing. Blink was famous for it. Newfound Glory did it very well. Sum 41 would do it. But you're not defined by this riff, and it's funny. Hadn't heard this song in a minute. When this part came out, I'm like, okay, now we're into the pop punk part.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this seems like it's getting maybe a little predictable. It's only on the first two lines, and then it's on lines 4 and 5 where those syncopated guitars come in. You don't get it on line 3 or line 6. On line three, the drums go halftime with some really cool fills. And again, on lines 4 and 5, the syncopated guitars are there again. There's no harmony on the fifth line, but there is harmonies on line 3, 4, and the 6th line. The lyric is, I'm giving up on doing this alone now because I've failed and I'm ready to be shown how. He's told me the way and I'm trying to get there. And this life sentence that I'm serving, I admit that I'm every bit deserving, but the beauty of grace is that it makes life not fair. It's an interesting bit of lyrics there, especially this life sentence that I'm not serving. What's happening here, Matt?
Oh, let's see. Life sentence I'm serving. I guess it's like being doomed to fail, right? The fallibility of humankind. It's like, yeah, we're born and we're not going to get it right, you know, all the time. And that's okay. That's the life sentence that I'm serving. But the conclusion, and it's probably my favorite line that Reliant K's ever had, is the beauty of, you know, grace and you know, forgiving people is that it makes life this completely unfair place to be. And that's definitely a creed in my life. You know, you see people online and getting all up in each other's grill about what they believe and what their view is and stuff. But you know what? It's like, you don't have to agree with everybody. It's not always going to be right. And it's okay. And the beauty of life is that we can just be cool with it.
Well, I think you need to come to my house this year for a holiday dinner and argue with my family. And we'll see how you come out of that one, Matt. I'm gonna put you to the test, my friend. You're too even.
Oh, man.
You're too even keeled. We go right into pre-chorus 2.
Not fair, 'cause I've been housing all this doubt. Insecurity, now I've been locked inside that house. All the while you hold the key, now I've been dying to get out. And that might be the death of me. And even though there's no way of knowing where to go, I promise I'm going because
pre-chorus 2 is pretty much the same lyrics here, except you start off with cuz instead of and on this on this one here. Probably, did you get in front of the mic and just say it that way, or was that a conscious decision?
Mistake, I imagine. Yeah, exactly. Wasn't thinking.
I love those beautiful mistakes. Sometimes they're cool and that adds that bit of realness to it, you know?
Yeah, maybe a subconscious way of separating those two sections, right? It's only that one word, but it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool.
Well, this is an interesting pre-chorus because there's now a lead guitar part throughout doing a counter melody lick to the vocals. It's very subtle, but it's great. I feel it more than I hear it, that part.
Cool.
And when it came across, like, why does this feel different? This doesn't feel the same as pre-chorus one. I went back and went, oh, that lead guitar lick's not there. And do you recall that happening in the studio?
I'm sure the intent was just to give that second pre-chorus a little lift and a little something special and new.
And was a lot of that done off the cuff in the studio?
That would have been done in the studio, yeah.
Okay, so this wasn't like thought out beforehand. This is the exact part. It's something that we're doing overdubs. Let's figure out something that works here.
Right. Let's get a cool tone and add a little lick here in this pre-chorus. Yeah, exactly.
Man, you know, the rest of songwriting, like the initial melody or whatever, and chords I can usually come up with, it's getting down to the lyrics and the composition and arrangement where that starts like, I need help. And then when it gets to the overdub stage, I'm usually pretty quick with that and magic happens. I love doing overdubs.
I could see you being, yeah, with the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so much fun. But yeah, this, the lead guitar doing that counter melody here just adds that little spark, adds something different. On the last two lines here, there's no harmonies like there was in pre-chorus one, but on these two lines, there's no harmonies, I believe, because there's vocal pads there doing the harmony. If you would have done the double harmony, you'd be using the same notes.
Right, right. And even though there's no way of knowing where to go,
I promise I'm going because... The pads doing the ahs here, it just lifts this part. It's so great.
It was kind of always this time, like you look at every song, like while you're finishing up the record, it's like, which ones should we put the Beach Boys on, you know? And so always like, I just want to stack myself singing all these harmonies. And that was definitely like, okay, that's a place where we could give it a lift and do that.
How much time do you spend with the harmonies? You had mentioned that, you know, I probably sang through the whole thing and then we go back and mute stuff out. Do you think that there could have been on these last two lines in pre-chorus too, there could have been harmonies there? You're like, no, let's keep the lead vocal with, harmonies off of that because we're doing the pads behind it.
Yeah, they were probably recorded and we've probably listened and said that we need to clear some space to make some room for the pads.
Gotcha. And any point up to this point in the song, we're closing on chorus two. Do you recall anything in the studio of like, hey, this part's too long, or by this point, like you got the arrangement down all the way to the end of the song?
Yeah, that'd be a good question for Mark. He would probably remember if he had to trim some fat. Odds are good, right? The thing is so clunky and awkward and it's got little bits of fried chicken coming off the sides. But I think, yeah, this is probably definitely a compromise of getting it down to 4 minutes.
Now you're in the middle of making this record and... Do you recall when the song was tracked? Was it tracked first in the record, middle, late?
It was tracked at the beginning part. I think we did. I don't remember how many songs are on the album, but we recorded most of them at one point, and then we added three more at the end. I had written three more songs. This is part of the initial batch, but we would kind of work on them all at the same time. Every day it was just like, let's try get five songs done on guitar.
So. And it's funny, every record I've ever done, I've always had one or two standouts in the demo phase or the writing phase. Like, oh, these are going to be the ones the fans love. And rarely does it happen. It's the other tracks that all of a sudden become the monsters of the album. You're like, where did this come from? You're in the middle of recording now. Mark's there, the whole band you're recording, and the tracks are coming back. You're starting to listen to stuff being built. Was this song a standout yet, or was it just another song at this point?
It was probably in our top five, but as I said before, we didn't choose to have Tom Lord Alge mix it initially, so we didn't really believe in it. And probably a little bit of that was, again, the clunky arrangement, like thinking that it wasn't palatable for the radio or something like that.
It's really not for that time period. If you listen to what was going on in our world, you know, pop punk and whatnot, it was a little more streamlined than something like this arrangement. But chorus two. Gotta get out of here. Cause I'm afraid that this complacency is something I can't shake. Yeah, gotta get out of here. And I'm begging you, I'm begging you, I'm begging you to be my escape. Different lyric on the second line. So it's, I gotta get out of here. But the second line is, cause I'm afraid that this complacency is something I can't shake. Third line, Sam, I got to get out of here. And in the end, and I'm begging you, I'm begging you, I'm begging you to be my escape. But that second line there, why'd you change that?
I didn't think that the rut line, the first chorus, I fell into this rut or stuck inside this rut that I fell into by mistake. I didn't think that was strong enough to do three times. So I was like, let's come up with another one. And it was cool to squeeze the word complacency in there. And that line does make sense. Complacency doesn't sing very well, you know? it's like, did I ruin it? But I guess I didn't ruin it. But yeah, definitely just wanted to give that chorus a little something different, because that rut line, it's weird to use the word rut, mm-hmm. I guess, to me. And I was like, I should probably only do that twice.
Do you remember that changing in the studio? Or did you already come in and say, no, second chorus is going to be a different lyric?
I had that already, yeah.
You had that already. That's great. Mm-hmm. After chorus two, this is where the song just completely... from here on out, just, it is great. It's just like epic from here on out. And before we get into this part, I think I've called it the bridge, but it's actually a reintro before the bridge. On the last line, yeah. On the last line of the chorus, before we move on, the drum groove is different here. It's different every time at the end of the choruses, which again is just adds to the whole, I'm using the word unorthodox, but it's never the same drum groove. It's completely different on all three times the chorus happens, which I think is great. After chorus two, we get into a reintro for four bars. That scratchy, overdriven guitar from the top of the song with a really blown out processed drums at this point. And then there's big hit on the drums, and big stereo guitars ring out for four bars as the intro guitar riff continues playing. And then we get into a bridge. I'm a hostage to my own humanity, self-detained and forced to live in this mess I've made. And all I'm asking is for you to do what you can with me, but I can't ask you to give what you already gave.
Yeah. So again, going back to just the Christian environment that we all grew up in, the idea is that the solution is already there, right? You know, the path is there to follow. And in the beginning of this bridge, I'm just saying, man, I've set myself up to fail. And, you know, it's self-deprecating, but like at least acknowledging the fact that I need to make a change.
Do you find, you mentioned during this time period, you were going through some personal stuff. And do you find that, having strife in your life can sometimes age you as a songwriter?
Oh, unfortunately, yeah. And how many times have I created the strife out of a need to create, you know?
I'm going to smash this guy's car window so I have something to write about.
Yeah. It's happened.
I'll deal with the consequences later. It's so funny. I've been so prolific as a writer during times of crisis before, a breakup or, you know, the death of a loved one or something. And just this song will come out. You're like, where did that come from?
Sometimes it's hard to find a reason to write a song, especially something that like you feel like this lyric needs to be out there. Or I need to get this, you know, off my chest. And so, yeah, when it's so personal like that and it's therapeutic for you, that's when songs need to be written. That's when they need to exist.
Right. Something else I love about this bridge is how sparse the harmonies are and where they're put. It's perfect. On the first line, you get a harmony on my own humanity. And on the third line, what you can with me. There's no harmonies anywhere else. And again, like you said, you probably sang a bunch and that's just kind of where you picked them because they made you feel good.
Give it a break. Give it a break. Take some out. No, that's probably what we did.
It's great. The first two lines of the bridge are just drum and bass only. And the bass sounds like it's got all of a sudden like this distorted growl on it. It's like a processed sound, but it's so big and vibey. It's great. And the last two lines here bring back the feel of the intro guitars doing that back and forth ping pong in the left and right speakers, that counter rhythm thing. It brings it back there.
Yeah.
And on the last line, there's an eighth note build up with the whole band for two bars, this cool little part that then launches us into pre-chorus three, where it gets weirder. 'Cause I've been housing all this doubt and insecurity, and I've been locked inside that house. All the while you hold the key, and I've been dying to get out. That might be the death of me, and even though there's no way of knowing where to go, I promise I'm going because... It keeps getting weird.
Oh, yeah.
This part is just piano and synth strings up until the word dying. I'm going to read the whole lyric, and I got some other stuff to talk about production-wise here. But when this part comes in, you're getting the pre-chorus again, but what a great departure here. The lyric is all the same up until dying. And on that, the big stereo guitars and drum hits happen on dying. And it's like a bang, and then to get out, there's another hit on out. This big, it almost sounds like the guitars were there and they were muted and unmuted. And you know, it's such a cool.
Yeah, it might have happened.
No, it's such a cool dynamic part. Yeah, and then at the end, there's eighth notes on the guitars and drum. There's a buildup on the line. There's no way in knowing where to go. Promise I'm going because there's a buildup there that leads us into chorus three. How did this part come about? Did you ever think that this was going to be full band? And you're like, nope, we got to throw them another wrench here. We want to break this down to piano and synth.
Definitely wanted to break it down. It's always a little, it's not a trick, but it's one of my favorite things to do in a song is give it that respite and take it to ballad mode. I, as a singer, way prefer to sing quiet and soft and delicate. And I kind of always thought it was really hard to sing in a punk band. You know, you lose your voice and all this stuff. And so I would always try to actually put little moments of relief for myself in songs. Like, okay, you can breathe here. You don't have to sing so loud.
Well, this part, this pre-chorus is so catchy. It's like a kind of a chorus in and of itself. But here, it doesn't feel samey because the production changed. You're getting the piano. Yeah, you're getting the pre-chorus again, but it's so great what you did with the production. Chorus number three.
I'm going because I gotta get out of here. Stuck inside this rut that I fell into by mistake. I gotta get out of here. And I'm begging you, I'm begging you, I'm begging you to be my escape.
It's the same lyric here as chorus number one. We're getting that second line again. I'm stuck inside this rut that I fell into by mistake. So different lyric there. And then that drum groove I was talking about at the very end. And I'm begging you, I'm begging you, I'm begging you to be my escape. On begging, the second begging and the third begging, and on the word be my escape, there's these big hits with the drums and the guitars there. So yet incorporating another feel that wasn't there at the end of the other two choruses. And then I believe this is the first time in over 100 plus episodes, Matt, that I've used this term. This is a coda at the end of the song.
Cool. I forgot that word existed.
That's what I'm calling this. And for the listeners, I actually had to look this definition up. And this is the perfect definition for this part. It's a coda is a detached portion of music, which is the end of a song. And when this came on, again, it almost feels like you're going into another song. Like, how does this work with the rest of the song? But it does. It's such a cool part.
Escape. I fought you for so long, I should have let you. But so are you. So are you.
Again, you're coming out of the chorus with these big hits on the three beggings and the B. You get those big hits with the drums. And then all of a sudden there's these eight bars of this beautiful piano with these synth sounds that are interspersed through there. Almost sounds like bells happening. Little ringing bells. And you're like, what is this? And then the lyric comes in. I fought you for so long. I should have let you in. Oh, how we regret those things we do. And all I was trying to do was save my own skin. But so were you. So were you. What's happening?
Again, it's like going back to that. I know the path. There's a clear way that I could get out of this. And yet I'm fighting it, you know, and this is kind of a retrospective, like I should have given in to, I don't know, trying to get over all this stuff. And I guess I should probably edit that.
I'm gonna go ahead. No, we're gonna leave that in. You know, we always for the listeners. Chris, our producer, always tells the guests, "Hey, if you say something that comes out, you know, you don't want to say it, we'll edit it out." But I think what you just said is perfect. It completely sums up this part.
Great.
Completely sums up this part because the part's so weird, but it's so cool. Every time I've listened to this the past couple of days, Matt, I said, "Dang it." If I could put a coda on a song that was this cool, it's just, yeah, just props to you. On the third line, you get a harmony on "Oh, How We Regret Those Things We Do." And you get a harmony on the line "But So Were You." The last line is just a single vocal. On the line "Oh, How We Regret Those Things We Do," there's a buildup on the piano, the bass, and the drums. It's not super heavy, but you think you're going somewhere again. And then it just dies down. It's like this crescendo that goes, whew. It's like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
And
little trick.
On the line, "And All I Was Trying to Do Was Save My Own Skin." Right after that, there's an O, but it's now stereo, the vocal. It's left and right, the O's. And it's so cool what that does right there, that mirroring of that vocal. The panning of that is in stereo, and it's really cool. And then the last three notes of the song. Now, I believe this song's, do you play it with a capo when you do it live?
I only play piano, and I actually have to tune my, I play keyboard, so I transpose it.
Okay.
Because I learned it in G sharp, which it's not in G sharp, okay. So.
Well, the last three chords here are E, D, A. It ends major. After you've had all these minor chords going on, it ends on this big A, and it's just, "So Were You," with these three little piano notes, and it's like, what did I just hear? And it ends
a little sappy.
Again, I guess that you wanted to make this a little different, as you had said, and you weren't thinking like, hey, this is going to be our breakout song or a song that defines our band. But was there ever any talk, look, this is a bit much now at this coda. What does this have to do with the rest of the song?
I believe that the music video and the single probably doesn't have it, right? I don't think they played that on the radio.
Well, I'll look up chords and stuff to see if I'm playing right stuff. Most of the stuff, 75% of the stuff's wrong online, but I came across this one site that said ending part. They called it outro, and it said optional. And I thought, what does that mean? And then I went and looked, and I noticed that it was cut. So there were some radio playlists that weren't playing the coda.
Well, I don't think we wanted them to.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think
we wanted to. Yeah, be that annoying, like, oh, I gotta listen to this extra minute of ballad on the rock radio station. But I remember writing the piano part to that outro probably before the rest of the song. And the whole goal was, I was like, I want to write something on the piano that I find challenging to play, because I didn't really push myself as a piano player. And so I just had to keep it. You know, I had to keep this part because I had worked so hard on writing something that was hard for me to play. So
what a interesting and great song. And I'm going to ask, so now the record's done, and did you get a vibe of this song? You said it was in your top five, but now you get the mixes back and you're like, wait a second. And when did it hit you that this song was something? Was it when you went out and played it for your fans, or you noticed online the song was blowing up? I'm assuming 2004 probably would have been blowing up on MySpace maybe then.
Yeah, right. That probably was true. I don't really remember. I really think it was just that story of, you know, when the major label wanted to do something back then, they could kind of make it happen. And this is our first shot at being on Capitol, and that was the song they picked. And so, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it could have been a different song, but I'm really glad it worked out the way it did. And I don't remember who picked it as a single. I really don't.
Well, man, I got to tell you, and I don't say this every episode, this is one of the more interesting songs I broke down on the show. It's really great.
Thanks, Chris.
It's really great.
I appreciate it.
Anything else you'd like to leave the listeners with? What's going on with you, the band, tour dates? What's happening?
We just finished a tour, but it was our first one in 4 years or so.
Oh my gosh.
So it was really cool to get back on the horse. You know, it's pretty crazy. I mean, you guys have been touring for 30.
Yeah. Yes. It's our 30 year anniversary this year. Yep.
Do you ever take more than a year off?
Never. No. The most we've ever taken all this
That's crazy.
Is, I think we took 4 months off in 2014. That was the longest break we ever had. Yeah,
so you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Well, not really, because we were always from the school of we were afraid to stop touring because people would forget about us, you know? And then there's the other side of it. Like, if we go away for a little bit, then maybe they'll want us back. But we were always afraid the door might be shut when we decided to get back on the horse. But yeah, man, just thank you so much for being on with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Can't wait to see you guys play again.
I hope you all enjoyed that amazing conversation with Matt Thiessen, but don't go anywhere. We got lots more Krista Makes a Podcast after a few words from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody. If you like Krista Makes a Podcast, I'm going to assume that you like music podcasts. And if you like music podcasts, check out One Hit Thunder. Each week, we dive into a one-hit wonder, and along the way, we gain some knowledge and have some laughs. Lou Bega, Crazy Town, Harvey Danger, The New Radicals, A-ha. We're over 100 episodes in now, and to paraphrase the great Matthew Wilder, nothing's going to break our stride. Subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is For the Legion, a four-piece punk rock band from Stockholm, Sweden, consisting of Ed Lindgren on vocals and guitar, Halla Lindgren on drums, Johan Loss on guitar, and Marcus Biggerson on the bass. You can find their music on all the streaming platforms. Here's a snippet of their song, Pick Me Up, Hey You.
The Rap with Chris and Chris.
So Chris, you had your work cut out for you in deconstructing this song to get ready for this episode.
Yeah, to say the least, it was a pretty epic and grandiose arrangement. This thing's it's a monster.
I think that's what I've always liked about Reliant K, and I think that's what my friends and bandmates have liked about him too, is I think that in our world of music, in punk rock, pop punk music, you sometimes hear a lot of the same things over and over. You hear a lot of repetition, not a lot of dynamics, and you hear the same things kind of rehashed over and over. Sometimes, I think you may have noticed that, maybe just playing music for 30 years, but Reliant K has always stood out as being very interesting musically. You don't get bored listening to them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd heard this song back in the day, but I kind of missed the boat with them. And wow, it's, again, I love this podcast because I get to see songs in a different light. I get to break them down and learn to enjoy them all over again for the first time. And this is a band I started digging around in their catalog. What a interesting band. And yeah, they could have taken the pop punk blueprint. I even mentioned in the second verse of this song, you know, they got those chugging guitars that are reminiscent of, you know, what was happening at pop punk, Blink and Newfound Glory and some different bands. But no, they didn't build just a song around that, because the song could have been just that, a little pop punk song, but it turned into what it is, and it's great that they pushed the boundaries.
It's crazy how I know certain people who completely missed out on this band. They crossed over. Look at the sales of this album. They're, I think, 800,000 copies of this album. They made it onto, you know, at the time this came out, TRL and MTV still existed. Mm-hmm. They made it into the countdown at that time. But obviously, they were and are huge in the Christian market. And sometimes people just miss that. I know I probably missed bands because it's kind of a whole different world. But this band musically is just insane.
Yeah, by 2004, when this was released, I mean, the pop punk explosion you know, it started, you know, I guess you could say, with Green Day in the early to mid 90s, but it really had its day when Blink hit in 99. And from there to 2004, the glut of bands that were happening that were getting signed to major labels, a lot of it just got lost in the shuffle for me. And I kind of probably wrote off Reliant K as one of those bands, but they're anything but. What an interesting, great band.
Yeah, they're great. I love that he dropped the No Knife influence.
Yeah.
That's also a band like that my band was, you know, early on influenced by, and just a very cool, interesting band that's not what you would expect to be an influence on Reliant K.
Right. And it's very interesting as well that their producer, Mark Lee Townsend, has been with them pretty much since the beginning. You know, how they met Mark was a pretty cool story. And he only sat out one record. He produced everything else. And you don't see much of that today. I told Matt that back in the day, 60s and 70s, you'd see bands that would have a run of albums with the same guy, but not so much anymore. So I thought that was kind of cool. He referred to him as the other member of the band.
When you have that trust with a producer and you know that you're going to that producer is going to get the best out of you, the best performances out of you, the best out of your band, it's hard to want to go to someone else when it's a wild card. You don't know if you're going to have that same level of trust and the same level of working relationship.
Sure. And I've also marveled the other way. There's bands that have had huge, huge records with somebody, and they'll go make the next album not with the same producer. And I just go, how did that happen? You know, and a lot of times it boils down, they just didn't get along with that guy. Yeah, the album sold 10 million copies, but no way do I want to get back in a room with him and make another record.
Yeah, sure. And I liked, this is pretty obvious, with a lot of great songs, I would venture to say most great songs, but you talked about kind of creating the strife out of a need to create. And
yeah,
I don't know if people necessarily do that. Maybe subconscious. I really like this solo artist. I've talked to you about her before, Julia Michaels, but she has this one line in her songs. Sometimes I think I kill relationships for art.
And sometimes I think I kill relationships for art. I start up all the shit to watch them fall apart. I pay my bills with it. I watch them fall apart, then pay the price for it. I watch them fall apart, but I just wanna be fucking happy.
I always think about that. Do we as musicians and artists subconsciously do that on purpose so we have something to write about? I don't think so, but it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I think with certain people, there's some self-sabotage going on for sure. I can't say that I've ever tried to make my life go purposely bad so I could get a song out of it. But you just never know. And that's kind of why I had brought it up, because he had mentioned early on, he said, yeah, I was kind of going through a rough patch during this time. And it seems that when we do that as performers and artists and musicians, that sometimes great things come out of that that pain, turmoil.
I think it is borderline impossible to write a good song if you don't have something to say. Do you find that?
Yeah, I do. A lot of times I'll just write lyrics to have, you know, we'll call them placeholders just to have on a demo. And when I look back on them, a lot of times they don't mean anything to me. They don't speak. Like, the song's great, but why isn't the song moving me as a whole? It's because the lyric's not moving me, and it's not saying anything. It's not speaking to me.
Yeah, I think that if you are a songwriter, that I don't care who you are, you're going to have bad moments. That's part of life. You're going to have sad moments. You're going to have angry moments. But you got to take advantage of that. And as an artist, say like, okay, now's my time to shine. Now's that should be your release. If that's not your release, maybe you're doing the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to, you know, unless you're just a ripping musician or something. But if you're an artist, whatever your art is, if it's songwriting, yeah. If it's painting, yeah. When you're going through something, that should be your release. And I like that you talked about that. And I also liked that you talked about, well, Matt talked about how he gives himself moments of relief in songs. That's pretty smart, Chris. Do you do that in your songwriting? Give yourselves think ahead to when you're going to be performing the song and be like, you know what, I got to give myself a break. I mean, I know in Lesson Jake, you got multiple singers, so maybe that those are your breaks.
Yeah, not so much in that way, but I've certainly written things that I didn't realize later were going to be a pain. It's like, yeah. Why did I stack all these vocals on top? And, you know, there's no breather in here. And sometimes when you're writing, you don't think about that. But, you know, I love how humble Matt was, and I want to give another nod to their drummer Dave Douglas on this song. I mean, mm-hmm. just the parts that he came up with, and it sounds like he was receptive to both Matt and producer Mark Lee Townsend's suggestions. They'd say, hey, maybe change this up. And, you know, every chorus, the chorus is supposed to hit you over the head in a repetitive way a lot of times. That's the hook of the song, the meat and the potatoes, what you remember from it. And in this track, yeah, the chorus is pretty much the same, albeit the second chorus has a different lyric. But every end of the chorus from a drumming standpoint is different. And that's interesting on a hit song. You don't see that a lot. It's vastly different all three times.
Yeah. And one more thing, and I think this is pretty obvious when people listen to this, but Matt Thiessen's really nice guy. I got to know him because Steve from my band lived in Nashville for a few years, and they became buddies down there. And I definitely hung out with him down there. He was always just the most happy, smiling, down to hang out guy. And, I don't know. You don't always expect that from someone from a very popular band. Always really nice. He did a guest vocal on a Punchline song from our last album, the song called Darkest Dark. Always been just such a cool guy. I think that obviously comes across in this episode.
Yeah, I use the word humble with him. He was a pleasure to talk to. And as I said at the top, he mentioned Less Than Jake as a main influence. I was very, very flattered. It was very, very cool of him to say. And he just looked happy to be here today. He had a smile on his face the whole time. And it was a great episode.
I'm always happy when people say something like that because I'm like, okay. Because Chris, you know, some of these guests we have on here, they might not know Less Than Jake. They might just think, who's this jag-off podcast host that I'm doing this. But when they know that you are a legitimate, like, songwriter and member of this legendary band and that, I don't know, I think that it just adds this extra level of, like, mutual respect. Not saying that there's anyone that's been disrespectful, but maybe some people have come on and just been like, oh, it's just this guy has a podcast. I'm just doing this thing. But, yeah, I think that makes it extra cool. I could tell that he was psyched to be talking to you today.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not just a guy with another podcast, Chris. I also have a VIP program here, a supporting cast that we can offer to the fans for as little as a cup of coffee or a beer for Chris and I a month. You can get extra episodes. It's called the After Party that we'll give you each week. So go over to ChrisDeMakes.com and sign up. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, you're not just a jag-off with a podcast. You're a jag-off with multiple podcasts. And a band, too.
That's right. So once again, head over to ChrisDeMakes.com. You can sign up over there and be part of our supporting cast. If you haven't already, join our Facebook group. I know I'm a broken record with this, but we have 4,000 active members in the group and growing. It's a great place to talk about the episodes that are coming up, the episodes that are already out. You can expound on everything, and Chris and I get in there and chat it up all the time. Please give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. And I want to thank this week's guest, Matt Thiessen, for sitting in with us. We'll see you next week.
Do you enjoy the content and production of Krista Makes a Podcast? Do you have an idea for a podcast or an existing podcast that you'd like to take to the next level? Well, check out weknowpodcasting.com. At weknowpodcasting.com, we have over 25 years of combined experience in the pod field, and we're ready to help you succeed in the golden era of podcasting.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.